Welcome and thank you very much for joining us in here tonight. It's late. It's past my bedtime. Maybe it's past your bedtime too. So I appreciate you coming to join us tonight. And we're going to talk about education, women, and the church in Africa. And this is my colleague, Sitsi Nariera, and her husband in the back, Justice Nariera. Justice and Sitsi are both graduates of African Christian College. Both of us are also employed there at African Christian College in the Kingdom of Swaziland. And we are blessed to be here tonight. Neither Justice and Sitsi nor my family, who also lives in Swaziland, and they're back there in the back also, none of us actually are from Swaziland, but we all live there. I'm from here in the U.S., and Sitsi and Justice are both from Zimbabwe. But we want to tell you a little bit about African Christian College before we talk some about the impact that education is making and can make upon women across the continent of Africa and how we're seeing some of those things happen through the women at ACC. So to introduce you to a little bit of ACC and African Christian College, we've brought this for you. Whoops, did I push the wrong button? Oh, okay.
So there's us, the United States. And there's Swaziland. Well, it's under the attack.
Service in God's kingdom. We are about transforming the students who come through our college to be people who love Jesus and follow Jesus and who are ready to face the challenges that are ahead of them, whether that's challenges in the church, in their family, at home, or in their community, in their country, to be like Jesus, but having the skills to work in business or development or counseling and in classrooms. Because the solutions for the problems that face Africa today and the future, be it poverty, disease, corruption, urbanization, all these types of things, is going to have to come from Africa.
Something was missing inside me. And when I sat down and thought, what is it that I need? I felt I just needed to have a relationship with God. Today, I am proud of what I've been out there. One, it helped me to know that working is just not working for the sake of getting money, but you're working to serve God, to make sure that everything that I do as an individual, God gets to be glorified.
Project is a key piece of our sustainability efforts at ACC. With over 14,000 macadamia nut trees on campus, the sale of the macadamia nuts provide a substantial amount of our operating funding, as well as employment for our students and unemployed neighbors.
seeing the world, myself, it has totally changed. So it means that my intuition has helped me to go into another. I'm seeing things differently. Yes, it really ignited that thing which was dead to say, you can do it, you are a self-start, you can do it. When I go back, I will start practicing what I am feeling right now.
Right now, one student there was saying, you never get out of this place. We always see you here just trying. This is my home. I felt at home.
African Christian College is celebrating this year 50 years of work in Swaziland. Started as Manzini Bible School in 1967 to train preachers. And has grown and changed. And this is a little picture and glimpse of what's going on at ACC now in Swaziland. And part of that change is an attempt to say, or attempt to do something more than just equip preachers. That was needed. 50 years ago, it was a great need in the church in Africa. Today, there's more members of the Church of Christ on the continent of Africa than there is in North America. And we still need preachers, but we also need to equip Christian leaders who are able to work in the church and be servants in the church and leaders in the church, but who are also school teachers and business people and counselors and in other roles as well, instead of just needing preachers. And that's the gap that African Christian College is working to fill. We are moving in that direction, have moved in that direction. We have students who come from throughout kind of the English-speaking belt of Africa, former British colonies like Uganda, Kenya, Tanzania, Malawi, Zambia, Zimbabwe, Lesotho, South Africa, and Swaziland. So our students come from throughout southern and east Africa. They travel a long way because Africa is a really big place, though this map makes it look kind of small. Africa is a big place. They come and they sacrifice much in order to come and study at ACC. And they're there to get a bachelor's degree. We currently offer one degree, which is a bachelor of theology degree. And we're candidates for accreditation continent-wide. And they choose between the majors in Bible and ministry, counseling, and organizational leadership. Bible and ministry is still equipping people for primarily working in the church. Counseling, our counseling major equips students to do lay counseling and work in nonprofits, often ends up either in schools as school counselors and teachers, or in medical clinics providing counseling in those areas. Organizational leadership as a community development business degree mix that's equipping those students to do that. It was in 1978 that we had our first female student, a woman who was Swazi, and she came to know God and Jesus, and she introduced her sister to the gospel. And she and her sister started planting churches in Swaziland, the two of them. Her name's Agnes Adonsi now. And she got married. She came to the leader of the school then in 1978, and Agnes asked Brother Manuel, "Men, why are only men here in this school? Can't a woman come and study as well?" And he said, "I don't see any reason why a woman shouldn't be able to come and study the Bible." And so Agnes enrolled as the first female student, and she and her husband, who is from Lesotho, fell madly in love with each other and got married, and they've been doing ministry now for many, many years in Lesotho and have done some amazing work there. I'll probably talk a little bit more about her. ACC also, as you saw in the video, has a similar problem as Pepperdine. Pepperdine, you know, is a really good school, but it's really known because it's so beautiful and the ocean views and things. ACC is a really good school in Africa, but we're known mostly for macadamia nuts by other people, especially here in the States. And you saw the macadamia orchard. We have 14,000 macadamia nut trees. that were planted first in 1997, and those help provide a substantial part of our income for operating the school. It doesn't give us everything, and it helps us to operate the school, but it's not enough for us to grow. One of the things that we often say is when those trees were planted in 1997, and Manzini Bible School was a preacher school for a dozen students, the macadamia trees would more than provide everything that the school needed to continue preparing a dozen preachers every year. But alongside, while God has been faithful in the growth of the macadamia trees, God's also given a bigger vision for what African Christian College should and could be doing, as we just talked about, with reaching and preparing students for all kinds of different work, not just for preaching, but Christian leaders in all kinds of different areas. And so the macadamia trees do help with that. And tonight, I didn't bring any macadamia oil that's in the picture here, though we sell that online here in the States. And if you live in Texas, it's in Central Market and HEB stores. But I did bring some macadamia nuts. So I noticed in the other sessions I've been going to, everyone's peddling their books. So I haven't written a book to peddle with you today, but I'll peddle some macadamia nuts. These are the best macadamia nuts you'll eat. They're from our campus in Swaziland, and these packages are $5, and so which is a good price, about 5 ounces, or it's a cup. So if you have a good recipe for macadamia white chocolate cookies, that usually calls for a cup. So this is good for one batch recipe in those. But that's really not why we're here, is to talk just about macadamia nuts or really about just ACC. But African Christian College is our mutual experience of Sitsi and I, and so it's our context and where a lot of our stories will come from as we talk about the ways in which we've seen this at work. But to get us started with that, we have one more video of one of our graduates.
My name is Kolile Bembe from Mangayane, Swaziland. I'm here at ACC doing counseling, majoring in counseling. I major because I love working with people, so the best place I could work with people with, for me, it was counseling. Mostly what I've learned is communication with people. I've learned how to talk, I've learned how to interact with other people. I've learned how to program stuff, organizing things I never knew. Here we are provided with work. You can work and get money. You pay your fees as much as you can take care for yourself with that money. In fact, that's what I've been doing. It's not like I came here having a lot of money. But coming here, I never had money. But with the resources the school provides, I'm where I am today. That means if I made it, someone else who's out there who wanna come to ACC can also make it, with or without money. That I'll be one of the women who will bring change to Africa in one way or the other. So getting education for me is just a starting point of the greater things that I have ahead of me, which I need to do.
Good evening. Education, women and the church in Africa. The question is, why are we talking about this now? Why should women get education? From the African context, from where I come from, a woman is not just a woman as she is. She becomes a wife. She becomes a mother to her children. And she doesn't just end there becoming a mother to her biological children, but she becomes a mother to the children in the community, in the family where she's married into, and in the community where she lives. In my African context again, if a wife gets married, you don't just get married to your husband, you get married to the whole family. So you'll have a lot of family members, or even have children before you have your own biological children. So, in educating women, since she has contact with these people, with the whole family and the community, she will pass on the education that she has to her family, to her children, to the community, and to everyone else in the family. Women are also known to be influential in communities, in different communities. So if someone is influential and she has the education, she has the higher chances and the opportunities to mingle with people and also to pass on the education. The world is changing, and the times are changing. In the past, the world was dominated with men dominated in the industries when as far as employment or work is concerned. But in this world, in these times, things are changing. In my country, and I suppose in other most African countries, the organizations, the NGOs, non-governmental organizations, they are coming in through empowering women. So if they want to put funds, if they want to fund a project, they will put maybe, they will say, okay, we need women in these positions. So if we don't have women who are educated, then we lose that funding. So they are empowering women in doing that. In some other companies, they have reserved positions that they say, oh, these are for women, or maybe it might be 50-50 or any other plan that they have. But those positions, they need to be filled with women who are educated, who know what they are doing when they are given those positions. And not just education, but Christian education, and then they'll be able to influence even the people that they are working with. Also in government, we have parliaments, we have members of parliaments. There are some seats that are reserved for women. So we also need women who are educated to occupy those positions and influence everyone who will be in there. So in these are the projects that the women will be involved in. They will help build up the community. They will help also in the church. They will mostly help in eradicating poverty. The women, if they are educated, I'm not saying okay, we are not putting men out of the picture, but we are trying to empower women and the influence that they have in different communities.
One of the things that Sitsina talked about is how different culturally their life is in Africa compared to ours. And we think about women empowerment or inequality between men and women in our American context, but it's a very different kind of inequality and those kind of things in theirs. And so a couple of things come to mind when we think about that to serve as some examples. One is actually just from campus this past week. I got a message from one of our teachers on campus who said, "Let me tell you about a conversation in class today." It was an ethics class, and they were talking about, what were they talking about? Oh, I guess they were talking about how you treat your wife or family and those kind of things. And a student in the class makes a very strong argument that it is perfectly okay for me to beat my wife whenever I want to beat my wife. If she doesn't do it exactly the way that I want it done, or she doesn't obey immediately, then this is a very appropriate thing for me to do. Some of the other students challenged him to say, no, not thinking that's okay. He says, no, this is okay. And let me tell you one reason why it's okay. If we open up our Bibles, the Bible even tells us to submit. The Bible even, you know, I paid for my wife because, well, he did. He paid Lobola in order to get married. He, whatever way did that work where he was from. In Swaziland, it's cows. You pay the father cows. And then, if everything's okay, then she becomes your wife. And it's an exchange of property in some ways. And he then makes the argument, she's my property. It's the same thing as, he says, slaves and masters, you're owned. And she's supposed to do what I'm supposed to do. what I tell her to do. Aish. Now, it's not a very positive example right from campus, but hey, it's the reality of how some people are thinking, right? It's the reality of the world that they're living in. And now that doesn't mean everyone in the room agreed with him, because I don't believe that they did. And he was definitely challenged not only by our teachers, but by the other students in the class to say, this isn't quite right. And if you were here last night thinking about in the field house with Dr. Mars, this whole idea, right, that we tend to look at the world through Genesis 3 eyes instead of Genesis 2 eyes, and that's very true in many African cultures. To think of another way, or I have several stories spinning in my head. One is kind of a funny thing, but I feel like I'm going off track, but I'll tell it anyway. So, and I have three daughters, so whenever I'm in the States and people will constantly say, oh, you have three girls, you know, you're all the only guy in the family, blah, 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 and all that stuff that people say, and then they say, man, just wait until it's time for them to get married, you're going to be broke, right? But in Africa, in Swaziland, people say the exact opposite, right? You have three girls, you're going to be rich, right? Because how many cows are you going to get when they all become married age? Anyway, that was a little off the track. But another thing that I've seen that maybe kind of helps us understand some of this, I've been going to some weddings in Swaziland. And these aren't, what I'll describe isn't really a traditional wedding. It's a Western-style wedding that happens, that they've adapted with their culture. But there comes a time in the wedding, at least the ones that I've been to, and someone comes up. It's usually an older woman, one of the mothers, as Sitsi said a moment ago. She comes up, and it's time, they're in the actual wedding service, they cut the cake in the wedding service. And as part of the service of cutting the cake, this woman comes from the groom's family. She comes up to give some instructions. Not on how to cut cake, though that's part of it, but she gives some instructions on how to be a good wife. And so, as part of the wedding ceremony, she's telling the bride, as she tells all of us, to be a good wife means always obeying your husband, always doing whatever he says, always making sure that you have plenty for him, even if it means you have nothing for yourself. And so the way we're going to actually practice that right now is we're going to cut the cake. And when we cut this cake, your job is to serve your husband the piece of cake. And sometimes, in some of those cases, it's also to serve then, as she said, you don't just marry the husband, you marry his whole family. So you cut him a piece of cake, and then you make sure you cut a piece of cake. While the rest of us want some cake, we're not going to get any. You cut some cake and go serve it to the husband's parents and his siblings and his grandparents and all of those people that make up his family. It's all part of the instruction of what it means to be a good wife. Now, in the Swazi weddings, no one gets up and tells the man what it means to be a husband. No one gets up and tells him what he's supposed to do. But this is a core piece that's been brought in even to the Western wedding. And even if the Christian preacher, which a Western wedding would be led by a Christian preacher, he's going to preach on loving one another and those kinds of things. But then we're also going to follow it with these instructions on how you're supposed to live. So, Sitsi, you're not Swazi. So, how has that worked in your wedding or in your culture? Is this the same way?
Yeah, it's also the same way. The emphasis is mostly given to the bride as the two gets married. I want to go back to the example that you've given for the husband who's saying, it's okay to beat his wife. If you can maybe talk to the wife, to her it's a normal life, because that's what she was taught by the elders. Those are some of the cultural practices that we have in our culture, that if you have been taught from a young age, you won't see that it's wrong, because that's what you were taught to do. So it's like it's okay, the husband is doing what he's supposed to be doing. But bringing education now in picture, it helps to unlearn those practices, those, I can call them abusive practices. Yeah. So when it's on a wedding, like what you have said, the most emphasis is given on the wife, on how she should behave and how she should be submissive to her husband. But now that we also have Christianity in picture, I don't think that's how Jesus Christ would want to see his own people being treated. We are all servants, and we should all be like him, be like Christ.
Yeah. That's good. So in your wedding, did this happen?
It's a bit different. I saved Justice's family, and he also saved my family. Mm-hmm. But after the wedding, we have another traditional wedding. I had to go to his family, to his where his family stays, to do the other practices. But him, he doesn't. They have to go to my family to do that. So most emphasis is given on the woman, on how to be submissive and serve your husband and the whole family. Yeah.
What are some ways in which you've seen at ACC, if someone comes to be a student and they're married, then we require them to bring their whole family with them. Many students would come and leave their wife and their children at home. And we say, not okay. If you're going to come to school for 3 years, because it's a 3-year commitment, then you bring your family with you. And so our campus has single male students, single female students, but also has a good half of the students are married. And they're there with their, if they have children under 12, they have to bring their under 12 children. Some of them bring the ones who are older than that, who are still at home. And so we have these families living on campus as well. How have you seen, you've been on campus for 5 years, and so have I. And so how have you seen some of the education that's happening changing some of those dynamics between the husband and the wife and in the family?
There are also some men who change after observing their fellow men, how they are behaving and treating their wives. So yeah, they were changing. But we have an example that you have given. It means that person isn't changed. So what I've seen in women as they come to ACC, like I said before, that they think that treatment is normal. But most of the ones that I've spoken to, after like 2 or 3 years, they would learn that no, this is not it. They will stand on their feet to say no, you cannot treat me this way, but you have to treat me this way.
Yeah, that's good. One of the things that we emphasize is even beyond this idea, but that to be like Jesus is to be a servant. And one of the challenges in Africa is this idea of wanting more for me, especially for the men. And this idea that I want to be a big man, and I want to have lots of power and authority and ability, kind of power, right? And so one thing that we emphasize a lot is trying to recognize that to be Jesus people, that Jesus exemplified power. He had all the power in the world, and he chose to wash feet instead of showing off. And so what does that mean in those kind of things? So one thing that we do on campus every Wednesday, we have meals together. It's kind of like someone said who was recently on campus during the cafeteria in the Waves Cafe tonight at dinner. This is kind of like Wednesday night on campus, of people sitting around tables eating together. But one thing that's different is we don't get to take our trays up and they disappear behind the wall and come back empty, right? But instead, we have big buckets of soapy water, right? And everyone has to wash their own dishes. Or on Wednesday nights, people are assigned and rotating to wash dishes. And it doesn't matter whether you're male or female, you're assigned to wash the dishes. So we have on our Facebook page this year, students and staff have been given a camera, a phone, once a day to take a picture, to put up a picture of the day of something that they like or see or notice and those kind of things. So a few weeks ago, some student took a picture on Wednesday night. My favorite day of the week is Wednesday night, sitting together and having a meal together. And so it was interesting to see a former student from about 15 or 20 years ago comment on there and say, "Ah, I hated washing the dishes on Wednesday night because that was an insult to my status as the man of the house. Ah. And I commented back and said, ooh. And he said, yeah, but I learned, right? He said, I learned, right? Servanthood, not power. And that's what's important, right? Is doing that. And so we talked the other day about seeing it in different ways on campus, too. We see students, they come to pick up their meals from the cafeteria. And when a family first arrives on campus, when class is over and it's time for lunch, the men go home, and the women go pick up the lunch and take it to serve to their husband. But in many of the families, by the time they're gone at the end of 3 years, at least some days and sometimes, the men will be the ones to go and pick up the food and bring it home. Now, we don't know what happens when they get in the house, but it's a big deal that that guy, that male, actually even walks himself into the cafeteria to pick up the food for his family and for his wife, even when she's not just sick in the bed, right? And so we see it, as Sitsi just said, not just changing women, but also helping to change. Education helps change the men in those situations to start recognizing some of that mutuality and those kind of things. You want to talk some about what happens to a woman when her husband dies and how education might play a role in that?
I have another example before I go there.
Sure.
There are some African cultural practices that that say, okay, they say, okay, you should obey your husband. So if maybe he sleeps out, he goes for some days and he comes back, you don't ask where he's coming from. And that's a cultural practice that some are still doing. And they think by not asking that, you are obeying your husband. But in this age, in this time where we have HIV and AIDS spreading like wildfire, this is not how to handle the situation. So women have to be educated and to know how to handle those situations. They can't wait, just to wait and to wait for the husband to bring in the disease. The woman has to stand up and look out for herself and the children that she has. Education also helps women to be independent. In the event that the husband has died, I'm not wishing for husbands to die and leave their wives behind, but just in the event that the husband dies, life has to go on. So if the woman is not educated, she's just there, she doesn't even know where to start from, then it becomes a problem because the breadwinner would have gone. Life has to go on. She has to be able to take care of her children, to send them to school and provide food for them. So if the woman doesn't have this education, and then what would she do? She won't have anything to do. But it's not also about just getting a diploma or a degree, especially in those areas in Africa where even if you get the degree, you don't have a job. So also you'll be left stranded, you'll be left jobless when you're holding your degree. But it's also taking education in the entrepreneurship courses that are there so that it'll be a backup. If you don't get the job that you might need to get, then someone can still do some businesses and be able to take care of their family.
Okay. I want to particularly tell a story about this woman here, Gift, who graduated in November of this past year. Gift is a strong woman and a smart woman. And one of the things that she did, let me just tell a story from her last year. At the beginning of the year, she took a course in entrepreneurship. And as that course was ending, she came into my office. All the students, as you saw in the video, the students have the opportunity to work on campus to pay their school fees. And for most of them, that means they have to work. It's an opportunity, but it's a reality that they have to have the money. And so they work on campus because most of our students are not Swazi. They can only work on campus because they can't get visas to work legally elsewhere. And so Gift was working. She had a great job because she's smart, she's articulate. She was working in our communications group. And so she was writing for our blog online and those kind of things, and she was doing a very good job at it. It was a coveted job, the job that other people want because it's not out in the orchard, you know, raking up nuts. And she came in and she said, I'm really nervous, but I want to quit my job. Which no one's ever done. I've never come into my office to say, I want to quit my job. They've come in to complain about the job that they've been assigned, but not quit it. And so I said, wow, why? And she said, well, you know, we just finished up this entrepreneurship course, and I want to practice what I've been learning so that when I go home in November, I'll already have tried some things and made some mistakes so that I'll be able to be more successful when I get home. And so I have some ideas and some things I'm working on, and I really want to spend my time doing that, but I can't keep my job, do my schoolwork, and start a business. So I want to quit my job and just do this. And I said, okay, that's really cool. You do know, though, you still have to pay your fees. Even if you quit your job and your other thing doesn't work, we're still going to expect you to pay your fees. She said, yep, I understand. I said, okay. So she walked out of my office having quit her job. I don't know what she's going to do. I didn't ask. I said, okay, let's see what's going to happen. But then, not even 6 weeks later, on a Wednesday night, my wife and I sit down, and Gift just sits down at the table where we're sitting. And I say, and actually Rachel says to her, Gift, I heard you quit your job. And she said, yeah. She said, what are you doing? And she said, well, I've started this new business. She said, you know, I learned some pretty simple but really important things that I didn't know before about business. And one of those things is sell things people want to buy, which seems like it makes sense, but it's not something that many people think about. They just sell what they have to sell rather than things that people want to buy. And she said, I started thinking, what are some things that I have access to that other people want to pay for? And she said, one of the things I thought of was fabric, which fabric is sold in stores all over Swaziland. But Gift is from Zambia, and Zambian fabric is the envy of Southern Africa because Zambian fabric is really elaborate, really beautiful, bright colors. It's much different than the Swaziland fabrics, and everybody wants Zambian fabric. She said, so I sent money back to Zambia to my sister and sent her to the store. She was WhatsApping me photos of fabrics, and I was saying, buy this one, buy this one, buy this one, buy this one. And then we worked out a system where it got shipped to me through this other friend who was coming to South Africa every week doing deliveries, and he would bring my stuff with him, and she would leave class, or on Saturday mornings when she didn't have class, she would get on a bus and ride to Johannesburg, South Africa, about 5-6 hours away, pick up her fabric, bring it back to Swaziland, and then she would go and sell it. Basically, she would go to, she said, where are people at that's going to buy my fabric? And she said, people who have good jobs. So I'm going to go to the government offices, because they have pretty much the best, most secure jobs. And she would go to the government offices, and basically go office to office. Look at my beautiful fabric. Don't you want to buy some? And she would sell them 3 times what she paid, even including the transport and all those costs. And she would just keep going back and keep getting more and keep doing more. And she told Rachel that day, she said, I've already made my money to pay off my fees for the rest of the year, for the school year. And I'm so excited. And I'm going to start this other business too, I think. She said, but right now I've got to figure out, because I'm going to graduate now in about 4 months. And how am I going to keep this business running? She said, so I've recruited a Swazi girl who's a year behind me, and she's my first employee. And I'm teaching her. She's going with me now door to door to sell the fabrics and those kind of things. And I think this is going to be really great. And so I was gone. I came back. Gift came back after graduation and the 1st of February. She came to campus and she said, I need to come see you. And she came over to my house and she brought her notebook from her business. And she sat down and she says, I want you to look at this. I made about $5,000 in 6 months while being a student at ACC selling fabric. She says, none of the other students believe me. They don't believe it's possible that I did that. Because $5,000 may, some of us did kind of gasp a little bit, and those may have been people who know. $5,000 is a lot of money in Swaziland and Zambia. A lot of money. In fact, probably more money than people make in an entire year. And so she says, I did this. Here's my records. Here's the people that I sold them to and how much they paid me and the dates they paid me. Now, unfortunately for her, her person that she recruited, that person isn't very good. Well, she's a good salesperson. She's not a good collector, right? And so you've got to be someone who's willing to go get the money once you give them the fabric and you make an installment plan. Gift didn't back down on the installment plans and refused to leave people's offices until they paid. This person's kind of like, I didn't have it. I don't want to be ugly. And so, unfortunately for her, she's learning about employees now, right, as well. But she said, but you know what? That's okay because I see the world in a totally different way now. And she started telling more stories, and she says, I have these friends, and they live out in the village, and they're just sitting there. And I say, what are you doing? And they say, there's nothing for us to do. There's no jobs for us. We can't do anything. All we can do is sit here. And she says, that's not true. They say, yeah, there's nothing we can do. She says, why don't you grow something? Look at all this land right here around your house. You could grow something. Well, then what? What are we going to do with the stuff we grow? You're going to sell it. Oh, who are we going to sell it to? She says, I don't know. But you can find somebody to sell it if you find the right thing that people are looking for. They kind of blew her off. She left. And she said, I went down the road, and there on the side of the road, not far from their house, were two or three different stands on the side of the road, and all three of them were selling the same thing. They were all three selling tomatoes, which is typical. There's usually stands. When there's stands on the roads in Africa, there's 50 of them right there together, and they're all selling exactly the same thing, right? There's not a banana stand and a papaya stand and a tomato stand. They're all selling tomatoes. So they're all selling tomatoes, right? And she stops, and she gets out, and she says, where do you get these tomatoes that you're selling? And they said, we have to go, they're in Zambia, we have to go to South Africa, buy tomatoes, and bring them in, import these tomatoes, so that we can sell them in this roadside stand on the side of the road. And she says, you're kidding. And they say, no, we can't find any tomatoes to sell here. So she turns back, she goes to her friends, and she says, tomatoes, you're going to grow tomatoes. And they say, why on earth would we grow tomatoes? Who are we going to sell them to? There's already people down there selling tomatoes. We're not going to go spend our time down there selling tomatoes. No, you're going to sell them tomatoes for them to sell tomatoes on the side of the road. Oh, you're crazy. And they refused to listen to her. She said, I've come to Swaziland to collect my money from my employee that we've collected so far. And so I'm going back home to buy tomato plants. And I'm going to take them over to those guys, and I'm going to tell them we're planting these tomatoes, and I'm going to hire them to plant these tomato plants, and we're going to sell them to those people on the side of the road, and we're going to start our tomato business. It's simple things, and it's not complicated lessons, but it's important things. And she took some small little pieces, simple entrepreneurship things like Sitsi just talked about, that can change the fortune. Someone who's relying upon someone else for everything and whose place is here to be able to step up and say, I can do this. And for them to start seeing the world in different ways and seeing the opportunities that lie before them and the great impact that can be made on them and upon their world. We could tell dozens more, but I'm not going to. I'm going to pass back to Sitzi and let her summarize us and tell us her own story.
I was born in a family of four, so when I finished my high school, I couldn't go to another level where I would go to university, because I had three siblings behind me. So my father couldn't afford me that education to take me to university to get a college degree. So at that time, I just had to do just a short course in something else. So, but at that time, that's when the Zimbabwean economy was going down. So there were no jobs. I would only get temporary jobs, maybe for 3 months, the other 6 months. So it was just like that. And then I got married in 2004. Got married to a preacher. So I was still jobless from 2004 up to 2009. I got a temporary job to teach at a primary school in 2010. I was teaching. At first, I taught grade 6, and then the other term, I had to teach grade 2. So when I was working with these children, I felt that there's something that I wasn't giving them, apart from just the academic knowledge. Some they were struggling in life, like they had some family problems. Like children, they'll come late to school, and then we'll ask about why they are late, and then they'll start explaining the problems that were happening at home. I didn't know how to handle those situations. I didn't know at all. So I felt the hunger for a higher education, but I didn't have the opportunity to do that. But when we had about ACC, that was in 2009, so we were supposed to go in 2010. But we didn't go. We went in 2011. Then we became students. So this time, when I was jobless, I had started like not believing in myself. I had self doubt. I was like, God, why are you letting this happen in my life? Like, I thought I was someone who is intelligent, but with this going on, I just said feeling sorry for myself, and I thought I couldn't do anything. But when I reached to ACC, the first courses that I took, one of them was English 1, and I'm glad that my English teacher is here, Susan Carter. So she taught me English when I was doing my first year. And when we finished that module, after writing our final exam, she wrote a comment on my paper. She wrote that best in class. And to me, that was... I didn't believe that, because I was like, that was a class, we were only three ladies and the rest were men. So I was like, oh, okay, I can do this. That's when I started getting encouraged and also started believing in myself that, okay, I can do this. So during just those, I think it was like 3 months, but already I'd seen that, okay, this education is changing my life. Okay, I had to rediscover myself, and I had to build my self-esteem, and with the people who were around me encouraging me, that worked. So, and here I am now, and after we graduated, I became the best in class. I was the top student in my class. Mm-hmm. It's something that I had not believed when I was just seated at home, I had not believed that I had this potential in me. So education helped me realize my potential that I hate. So same applies to other people, to other women who are out there. Many African women who are out there. There's a lot of potential in them. They have talents that they have, but they are not realized because of the situation that they are in. But if they can come out of their zones that they are in and get education to help them open their mind, they will see things differently, and they will have a changed worldview. What they need is just the opportunity to be granted the opportunity, like what happened to me. That's what they need. And in that, we also help fight against the gender inequality and abuse, to fight the poverty in communities and even in families. Thank you.
We're very grateful for your coming and joining us tonight and letting us share some stories and some, hopefully some inspiration and some insights into why it's so important, the education. And we're at ACC because we believe that education is the most powerful thing that we can do. As the video said at the beginning, the problems that are facing our world are great. And the problems facing Africa are great. And the opportunities are great as well. And the solutions are going to have to come from Africa. Not from most of us in this room, but from the Africans themselves. And as we continue to provide education and those kind of things, those are key pieces of in seeing a transformed continent. And as Sitsi said earlier, Christian education, where people are being formed into Christ's image, as well as getting some knowledge and skills, those things combined will make a powerful force for good across the continent. So thank you very much for coming. We do have macadamia nuts. I didn't say earlier, we take cash, but we also take credit cards if you don't have any cash with you and want to get some of those. But thank you very much for joining us tonight.